Welcome back to Resilience Radio. You'll notice a change in two of our upcoming episodes, namely on January 15th and January 22nd. On those podcasts, we will be offering a unique and exclusive look into the conversations between host Kim Addis and her friend David Wolf. Listen in as they review, analyze, and discuss real journals for the purpose of providing deep and intimate and intense coaching. We invite you to not only listen in, but to get in touch with us afterwards and give us your thoughts, your comments, and your feedback. We hope you enjoy this unique and unusual behind-the-scenes look into the world of coaching and the thinking behind one of North America's most recognized experts in thought management.
Welcome to Frame of Mind Essentials, where we teach the essentials of frame of mind coaching through a journey of engaged dialogue inspired by actual journal passages. I'm David Wolf, and with me to bring Frame of Mind Essentials to life, as always, is Kim Addis. She's the creator of Frame of Mind Coaching. Hi, Kim.
Hello. Happy to be here today.
Happy to have you, as always. So tell us about today's journey.
Well, today what I thought we could do is actually read through three very different journals and read them all in one blob and then go back and discuss them. Okay. And really what I wanted to do is look at them separately and then together and kind of start to tie some strings between them and show how one area of life might impact another. So that's okay. What I want to do today. You might think that they are unrelated, but to me, you know, keep in mind when you're listening to these journals, ask yourself, what does one have to do with the next?
Okay.
Okay, so the first one really talks about intimacy, so personal intimacy or mm-hmm. physical intimacy between a husband and a wife. Mm-hmm. Okay, so here we go. And they're all short, by the way. So here's number one. How do I describe my marriage? We coexist. We're partners and even friends. Sometimes we go out together to see a movie or go out for dinner. We have some laughs. We enjoy some of the same things. He tells me he loves me, but we haven't been physically intimate for a long time. There are times when it confuses me and eats me up inside. There are other times when I'm perfectly happy just the way things are. I often wonder if he finds me attractive. I'm not sure if this is normal. Is this how things unfold after a long marriage? I'm not sure. Okay. So that's journal number one.
All right.
Journal number two is really about parenting and the different approaches that two parents have when it comes to raising their kids. So here it is. I just got into a massive argument with my wife. We just don't see eye to eye when it comes to raising our kids. She wants to be their friend, and that's in quotes. She's soft on them and lets them walk all over her. I'm much tougher. I want to make sure they grow up right. I want to teach them discipline and personal responsibility. She does everything for them and then covers up for them. How will they ever learn? They're just going to grow up to be spoiled brats. So that's number two.
Wow.
And then number three is written by an entrepreneur about someone who works for him. I have an assistant who is fairly new on the job. She constantly walks into my office while I'm working and interrupts me with questions that she could easily figure out on her own. I get very irritated and find myself seething inside. I don't say anything, though, because I don't want to hurt her feelings. I just don't feel equipped to tell her that she's annoying me. I'm afraid that I'm too abrasive.
Okay.
So let's play around. What does one have to do with the other? If we go back to the first one, it's interesting because the one around intimacy is this person, to some degree, is at peace with this.
Yes.
To some degree.
Yes.
And I'm not sure if I would say actually that she's at peace, but that she's resigned.
Right.
Right?
Right. She's accepted a situation because she doesn't really feel necessarily that she can change it. They can change it together. Right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a place where she's living, she's coexisting. Sometimes she's, you know, everything's perfectly fine. She doesn't feel any internal turmoil. Mm-hmm. And other times she just doesn't understand how her life has turned into this story.
Right. She may have had some story at the beginning of this, whatever, how many year marriage it is, that projected something very different. And so she's having a problem comparing what she expected with what is. I'm just guessing.
Exactly. In the second one, we have a husband and a wife, and the husband is clearly upset, angry with his wife for the way that she raises their kids. Mm. And he feels that, she's spoiling them in essence. And it sounds like he feels that there's a different, better approach, one that's a little tougher, one that's a little more strict, to teach his kids what he thinks is important for them to learn: discipline and personal responsibility. And so in this case, you have a person who is unhappy with the behaviors of his wife. Are you starting to see the connection?
Yes. Yes. In the first case, it's about their direct intimacy. In the second case, it's about the way they're raising their children. So the children are like a projection of their relationship or some dysfunction or something, right?
Well, in the first case, the wife is wondering about the behaviors of her husband. In the second case, the husband is not happy with the behaviors of his wife.
Okay, so it's behaviors is the big word there I'm hearing you sort of highlight. Is that right, Kim?
That's right.
Not happy with the behaviors of the other in the partnership.
Exactly. Right. In the first case, she wonders if her husband even finds her attractive.
Right.
In the second case, and I'm projecting here, he's wondering why the heck his wife is doing what she's doing when it's clearly not in the best interest of the kids.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, in the third case, there's a guy, an owner of a company, who is getting irritated with someone who walks into his office while he's working and interrupts him with questions that she could figure out on her own.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, he doesn't like her behavior.
So once again, it's someone doesn't like someone else's behavior.
Exactly.
In a coexistence of some kind. It's ranging from intimacy in a marriage context to all the way out to the work zone.
Exactly. Yeah,
but still, it's the essence of it is that what you're pointing out to, as far as I can tell, is the expecting a behavior of someone else and
right.
disappointed about it.
I don't like what you're doing.
Right.
Right? I don't like the way that you're intimate with me. I don't like the way you raise my children. And I don't like the way you interrupt me when I'm working.
Now, one thing that's kind of cool is there's a spectrum of, call it, number one is the most complacent and accepting and willing to, what was the word you used?
Willing to accept it, resigned.
Resigned was the word,
yeah.
So she's the most resigned. And then the third example out the spectrum is it sounds like he's downright angry about it.
Yeah, he says, I get very irritated and find myself seething inside.
Yeah.
Now, there's a similarity between the last one and the first one also. And the similarity is, in the first one, she thinks about her intimacy inside her head, doesn't really address it.
Mm-hmm.
In the last one, he says, I don't say anything because I don't want to hurt her feelings. I just don't feel equipped to tell her that she's annoying me. I'm afraid that I'm too abrasive. So he internalizes this. And what happens is he's literally seething inside. He's boiling up inside.
So it's like he's not expressing his anger.
He's not expressing his anger. Mm-hmm. In her case, she's maybe not so angry, but maybe more hurt. And in the last case, he's fuming. Yeah. And in the case of the father who believes that he should raise his children differently,
right.
he's vocal about it. He just got into a massive argument with his wife. And as vocal as he is, he's still at a standstill. So you have three people with different approaches, different thinking patterns, but who are all stuck with the same idea that someone else is doing or treating them in a way that is less than stellar.
Hmm.
Right?
Right.
And so if we look at the frame of mind coaching principles, we can rearrange or address each of these in a very similar manner. The first thing that we want to look at is the idea that the way you feel is a function of your thinking. It's not a function of the way anybody else behaves. That's number one. That's the first thing we want to teach each of these particular journalers or clients.
Okay.
Okay. So one is seething, one is hurt, one is in a massive fight, right?
And yeah, I'm starting to see the mechanics visually as you're talking through this. The way you feel is a function of how you're thinking. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry, Kim. I'm just catching up to you.
So in each of these three cases, they're pointing the finger at the other. And what we teach at Frame of Mind Coaching is the way you feel is your responsibility. It comes from your thinking. It doesn't come from somebody else's behavior. And so what we want to do is put the onus back on the journaler or the client to say, hey, you're upset, but the reason you're upset has nothing to do with this other person in the picture. The reason you're upset has everything to do with the way you're thinking about the other person in the picture.
So I'm really anxious now, you know, as you're sort of moving naturally into this, peeling the layers back, as you like to say, in each of these situations to, I guess, shine a mirror or sort of reflect, wow, here's a pattern we see, or here's a way you're thinking that is making you feel this way, and you can change it. You can make a choice, right?
That's exactly right. And so this is what we see very often when we coach people, is that people feel like victims. They feel like they're at the mercy of other people in their lives. Could be their bosses, their spouses, their children, their mothers, their sisters, their brothers, whoever. Mm-hmm. But somebody else did something to treat them badly, or to affect them, to annoy them, to irritate them, to get them pissed off.
Yep.
And right away, what we want to do is say, hey, the reason you're pissed off has nothing to do with what anybody else did. It has everything to do with the way you think about what somebody else did. So let's stop using them as an excuse for your misery.
Oh, that sounds so elegantly simple. Okay.
Well, so, you know, what happens is they kind of go, okay, so if I'm responsible for my happiness and I'm used to this behavior, this pattern is so deeply ingrained, the instant reaction is, yeah, but they,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it takes two to tango. Yeah, but I can't work on this parenting thing by myself.
Mm.
Yes, but it takes two people to be intimate. Yes, but in a work environment, it's a team and it's two people involved. And I want to tell them that that's the first and most important mistake you're making. It does not take two people to tango. It only takes one. And you're probably going, what?
Yeah, I am going, what? So in other words, you're saying this is the client saying this about the other in the situation. And you're saying, never mind them. You have a choice. You can change how you think about what is going on here. That's my way of simply putting it, but
yes.
Is that how you say it?
So, but let's go back to the whole tango thing, because you're probably, those of you who are listening are still probably thinking, well, how can you tango by yourself?
That's exactly the question I had. In other words, I thought you were about to say the other thing, which is, wow, you really need to form a team with this person so that you can coexist with them, and that would eliminate the tension or the friction or the negativity or whatever you want to call this discourse.
All.
And you're saying, no, not at all. So this is a great redirect.
Because if your happiness is dependent on the other person's cooperation, then your happiness is always at the mercy of someone else.
Right.
And okay. That's not a great way to live.
Okay.
So if the other person wakes up and they're in a bad mood, or they're in pain, or they're having a bad day or a bad experience or whatever, a bad dream, whatever it is, unless they're happy, you're happy, then you're often going to find yourself unhappy. That's not what we're after. That's not how we equip our clients to take responsibility for the way they feel.
The word boundaries came to mind, and that's just, is this about that? Is there a line we draw, or is that just not the approach here?
Okay,
you can
so
maybe sort that out a little bit.
You're exciting me here, because what? I love it when people bring up the idea of boundaries.
Well,
why?
I'm doing my
why?
Job as a
because,
as your co-host.
Yeah, you didn't even know, right?
Right.
So what is a boundary? A boundary is typically a line that you draw in the sand, or, you know, sometimes a fence that you create that says you're not allowed to pass this line. A boundary is to prevent someone else from taking action that you don't want them to take, mm-hmm. typically. Mm-hmm. And we have another essential in Frame of Mind Coaching, which I was about to get to shortly, but we'll fast forward. And that is, what you focus on grows. And so when you create a boundary and you say, don't do that, what are you focused on? You're focused on that which you don't want the other person to do.
Right.
Okay, so what a boundary does is have you focused, has your energy taken, siphoned off to the place exactly where you don't want it. Now, this is not conventional. In every other coaching system in the world, they teach you have to create boundaries for self-preservation reasons. And I say, no, we don't want to create boundaries. We want to lower boundaries. We want to create ease. And we want to help you turn towards that which you want, rather than that which you don't.
I get it. Boundaries, by definition, is this line, it's this wall, it's this negative sort of energy. It's what you don't want. That's your point. It's don't exactly. focus on the boundary, because exactly. that's not what we want here. We want you to work together in harmony, but by doing it a different way and focusing on what you want.
Exactly. So let's apply the concept of boundary to the last journal, the guy who has an assistant who constantly walks into his office while he's working and interrupts him. If we say, you know, you have to create boundaries, then he would say to her, when I'm on the phone or when I'm busy or whatever, do not come in. Right? So is he building an alliance? Is he building a relationship? Is he creating something wonderful and lovely in his work environment?
Of course, we would say no.
No, that's pretty harsh, right?
Yeah. And he's focusing energy on what he doesn't want, which is
exactly. Yeah, yeah. What would it look like if instead of creating a boundary, mm-hmm. and some people have the idea that boundaries are healthy, a healthy boundary. And I don't know who invented that term, because boundaries, there's nothing healthy about boundaries. What if he said to her, the best time to talk to me and when I could give you my full attention is between 2 and 4. Or first thing in the morning. Here are the best times. In fact, let's schedule regular appointments during the day for 15 minutes at a time when I could give you my full attention. Look at the difference.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
It's night and day. And that idea is based on the concept of focusing on what you want. What you focus on grows. So let's focus on what we want. I want a great relationship with my assistant. I want to communicate effectively. I want her to feel welcome. I want her to be successful. I want her to get her answers to the questions she needs. I want her to learn so she has less and less questions over time. And so let's create something that enables that. Those are the things I want.
So useful. Oh, my goodness. And I love this redirect away from boundaries, because you're right. It's out there in the vernacular of, like you say, whoever invented this thing, it profoundly distinguishes frame of mind coaching from other methodologies and models, right? I mean, that's part
right.
of what we're saying here.
Now, we jumped ahead, okay, because we're still talking about doing the tango.
Okay.
Okay? This
yeah.
is important.
I was dancing a little fast. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, you were dancing a little fast. Yeah. But let's look at this particular example. Who's taking the lead? Him or her?
Who's taking the lead? Well, she is controlling his behavior. Is that what you mean?
No, not at all. In order for him to implement something that he wants, who needs to take the lead?
He does.
He does. And when you do the tango, if you and I are tangoing and you're taking the lead, if suddenly you change the steps, it can go from a tango to a cha-cha because you're taking the lead.
Right.
And what happens when you take the lead and we're in a dance together? I have a choice. I can stop dancing or I can follow along.
Mm.
Right? So does it take two to tango? Does it take two to constantly move in the same way in order for something beautiful to happen? No, you can change the steps to change the dance. Right now we have a dance between an entrepreneur and an assistant, and the dance looks like this. The assistant interrupts, the entrepreneur is pissed off, and he seethes inside, and she continues to do what he doesn't want her to do because she doesn't know that there's a different option. And the minute that he takes his lead and changes the dance is the minute the dance changes.
Wow, that dance metaphor is quite profound. So, because it's such a visual thing to see that, particularly in a case where so much of this is being internalized by this guy, you can't dance inside. No one sees it. There's no step. There's no partner. It's all right. I mean, is that part of what this is about?
But this is about, so before you can change the dance, you have to change your thinking about the situation.
That's
you have
the
to change part. Your interpretation of this assistant and what's happening and why she's doing what she's doing. Because if your interpretation is, wow, she's dumb, she doesn't realize she's bothering me, you know, she can't read social cues, on and on and on, you're not building what you want. You're just keeping the dance the same.
Here's a question. So in this instance, if you were working with this client, would you actually ever gently suggest a different way of his experience of her? In other words, how do you get to the breakthrough, I guess is what I'm asking.
Very simply, I say, what do you think of this person? Why do you think she keeps interrupting you? And he says to me, he might say to me, well, because she's new and she doesn't know what she's doing and she may feel insecure. And so what do you want? Do you want an insecure worker? What would you like from this person? You want someone who's confident, who knows what she's doing, who can make decisions on her own, but you need to equip her to get there.
Mm.
So let's look at strategies to equip her to feel confident, secure, and able to make good decisions.
Okay.
Right? And so what I do with my clients is I show them how their view of the other person is very often contrary to the very thing they want.
The word assumptions comes to mind. In other words, they're making assumptions about this person without actually communicating with them? Is that?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And we haven't even talked about the communication part yet.
Oh, boy.
But let's just stay on this for one brief moment, right? So you're asking me if I would help them see the person differently? Yes. Mm-hmm. I would help them understand how their vision about everything creates their experiences, right? So for anyone who's listening right now, the way you see anybody else in your life will determine the experience you have with that other person. And so if you want a different experience of another person, you have to decide how you would rather see them. What you focus on grows. And so if they're doing a lot of wrong things in your mind, but they're doing a few right things, which one should we be paying attention to? Which one should we be paying attention to? The ones that they're doing right.
Yeah. So in this case, she may have some qualities that he's just not seeing because he's so caught up in being dissatisfied with her behavior around these things that he doesn't want her to do.
Sure.
So if he said, oh, well, she's very plugged into some aspect of the business, or she's very good with the other people in the office, or so would you simply begin to sort of change the lens he's looking through?
I would, and that would take maybe a little bit more time. But what I always want to do is ask my clients, what do you want? So right now, he doesn't speak up because he's afraid he's too abrasive. But if you say to her, here's how to accomplish what you're trying to accomplish, how does that become abrasive? Right? It's not abrasive at all. It's warm, it's friendly, it's inviting, and it's open. And so the minute you switch the way you think is the minute you start to interact with others a whole different way. And so I think last time we talked about what needs to happen first. We need to switch our thinking before we take action.
Yes.
And that's exactly the work we're doing here. So let's take these ideas and now superimpose them on the other examples.
Okay.
So there's this guy who gets into a massive argument with his wife because he feels that she's not doing the right thing. Now, so he has a basic, you called an assumption, I'll call it a belief.
Mm-hmm.
The belief is that if someone else parents his children a certain way that he doesn't agree with, those children will become spoiled. Let's try to apply these principles to the other examples, the other journals.
Okay.
If you take the example of the man who got into a massive argument with his wife because of the way that she was parenting their children, he has a basic assumption that if she continues to do what she's doing, his kids will turn out to be spoiled and rotten. So what does that say about his kids?
That their behavior is completely dependent upon her behavior. I mean, I'm not sure I'm getting it.
Well,
but
yeah, that he's saying, well, my kids don't have the ability to do the right thing.
Right. Okay. So I was tracking. Okay.
Right? My kids don't have the ability to do the right thing. And I don't trust my kids to do the right thing because the only way they'll do the right thing is if I discipline them and teach them personal responsibility with a tough hand, with a strong hand. I need to be strict.
This is the belief. So maybe yes and maybe no. But you say the core here is that he doesn't believe his children have the tools and the capacity to be able to make good decisions unless you have this sort of parenting style.
Exactly.
Which may or may not be true.
Exactly.
Well, okay.
So there's all kinds of things happening in this particular case. He's at odds with his wife. He doesn't like the way she's behaving. And so the same principles apply as what would you like, right? How are you seeing your wife?
Mm-hmm.
How would you like to see your wife? Right now he sees her as a bad mother, right? So So the first piece of work that has to be done is to see his wife as someone who truly cares and loves his children.
Yeah.
Right? So yeah. That's number one.
Start
She's
there.
She's a loving and caring mother.
Mm.
That's number one. Number two is, what do you want for your children? You want them to grow up with personal response. You want them to grow up to be great people, to make good decisions, to contribute to society, to have great relationships. And so how do you breed that in your children? You demonstrate it. And is he demonstrating any of that?
No. He's setting a cycle, potential cycle in motion.
Right,
that's
but
not
he's,
positive.
Exactly. What he's doing is he's blowing up when someone else isn't behaving the way he wants them to behave. So does that demonstrate discipline or personal responsibility?
No.
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 And so what we do with this man is show him the connection between his thinking, his behavior, and how his thinking and his behavior leads to the complete opposite of what he wants.
Wow. That's cool.
Right?
Yep.
Now, understand, I got, literally 4 or 5 sentences from this guy. But you can see how thinking plays a role in getting you outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
So if what you want is discipline and personal responsibility for your children, number one, demonstrate it. Number two, acknowledge it when your kids demonstrate it themselves.
Yeah.
And trust that your kids have it in them to be that way.
I love that kids. That idea right there, Kim. Trust that they have the ability to be that way. And I guess for me personally, that resonates because I was raised that way too, where there was this, I knew that I was trusted. You've got to really show this client that what he's thinking is producing exactly the opposite result, just to quote you. That's exactly it. And there's a lot of work to do. And right, from just a couple of phrases.
Right.
Profound.
Okay, so now let's take this idea and go to the first example, the one where there is no physical intimacy in the marriage.
Right.
So the basic premise here is that my husband is responsible for the physical intimacy that I experience in my marriage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I am not responsible. I don't have a role to play here.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the first question we would ask this particular person is, what is it that you want? Do you want to be intimate? Because I'm not 100% sure. There are times when you're perfectly happy just the way things are.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that you want? What we're doing here is we're challenging the person to really, really think about what kind of relationship do you want to build and what role do you play, can you play in building that relationship? So if you are playing the tango in the dance of intimacy, what can you do to make it a more intimate experience?
Right. And then even before that, what I'm hearing you say is, ask her to really, really dig deep about what she really does want the relationship to look like. Back to, what do you want? So that you can manage your thoughts to produce those results, right?
Right. But there may be a whole lot more underneath this.
Mm-hmm.
And I always like to look at what people believe to be true, particularly around the subject of relationships and intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I ask those questions is she may believe that it's his job, his role, his responsibility to initiate and create intimacy. She may believe that his desire for her is an indicator of her attractiveness. She may have a whole host of beliefs that shut down the intimacy equation.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
He may have tried to be intimate, and for some reason, inadvertently, without being consciously aware, she may have shut that down herself. And so we want to explore all of that and really, really understand her view. Is intimacy a good thing? Is it a beautiful thing, or is it illicit? Because if on any level you think, well, intimacy isn't really, let's use the word kosher for lack of better words, right? Then she's
right.
Not always going to be open and willing and up for it. She's going to have some measure of discomfort around that. And when that shows up, it creates a wedge in the intimacy. So we have to explore all that thinking. And when all that thinking is cleaned up, we also have to explore the idea that she can profoundly make a difference on the intimacy scale in her own marriage. So just to wrap this all up, look at all three of these journals, we're looking at the idea that somebody else's behavior can cause unhappiness or displeasure or frustration or irritation. And that's something we've invented. Because the real truth is the way you feel is a function of your thinking. It's not a function of the way anybody else is behaving. Mm-hmm. That's number one. Number two is what you focus on grows. So what are you focusing on in your life? And what are you watering? What seed are you watering?
What's profound about this is, as you said at the beginning of all of this, these are three very different sounding scenarios, passages from journals, with a tremendous amount of commonality. So powerful. Kim Addis, those are the essentials for today. Thank you so much for the work you're doing, and this was just an incredible session.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you next month.